How's the homeschooling going at your place? Is it starting to sound anything like this?
Hey guys, I made a color-coded chart. It'll track your hourly progress for the next 4 weeks.
Okay, we're gonna start the day by reading for an hour. Then I want you to come to me and give me a summary of what you've learned.
We are gonna make math fun. It's not mathematics, it's math-a-magic.
We all start out with good intentions, don't we? But if you do have school-age kids, now might be the time you start to have a new appreciation for their incredible teachers. Like most of the adaption going on at the moment, I wonder if you found things that really don't work, some that do, find creative workarounds to some problems. Could the way schools operate change forever because of the things that we are doing now? Let's talk through the possibilities with our futurist, Steve Sammartino. Steve, good morning.
Good morning.
What a time to be alive. This is a time that we will remember literally for the rest of our lives. I keep thinking about it in terms of schooling, that in like a couple of decades to come, we will be in the textbooks that kids are studying.
Yeah, we will be, actually. It's one of those moments. And I think there'll be seminal changes. You know, it's a seminal moment where some things will change forever. I think we'll realize that schooling is not as easy just to do at home just because you've got the technology, because the whole point is the kids need to be in another building. And I reckon some of the listeners might have just even given up and said, look, just watch TV, just leave me alone so I could get the work done, you know. So, you know, it we realize that the physical space, that's a large requirement of the teaching. It's not just the ability to pass on the lessons. You need someone to do it and you need the space to do it, and you need that separation. So it's going to change a lot of things.
Is that's mostly for, you know, primary school, high school, that idea of needing that space, of sending them somewhere else is still key to what we do?
I think so. I think certainly with the primary school. I mean, the thing that I think we'll see, there'll be a delineation between the two. So in the primary school element, we'll realise that large parts of what the teaching is rustling all the kids together, teaching them how to sit still, teaching them to be in a place and follow like a set of instructions. Whereas high school and university, I think we're really going to see the truth that large parts of that construct on getting together isn't really required. Lots of it can be done offline, certainly with the universities, and much of it is offline. And I think there's going to be a permanent shift. The thing that's so interesting for me about the universities is how they restrict learning for people. I mean, the thing that I've been against for a really long time is the idea of an ATAR, and the idea that some kids get into the university and some don't, when the truth is there's no limit to how many kids could study certain courses. The truth is that you can do it online. And the reason that they restrict it is to maintain a premium product and to have an air of exclusivity. And I think that kind of goes against what we value as a society and as civilization.
It's really... Yeah, it's really interesting on ATAR. I was reading about that this morning, that there may have to be huge considerations that come into place for kids, students this year setting ATAR, because schooling has looked so different. And so where do we sit that so that it does fit within that scale? So almost that whole idea of that scale is starting to be questioned a little bit.
I think it's one of the greatest things to come out of this is to reassess the entire idea of an ATAR. Now, we need to think about what the ATAR is. It actually isn't an assessment of capability. That's the first thing we need to understand. What it is it's a score to keep people out. It doesn't mean you're not capable of passing the exams in that course you want to get into. It's a demand-driven number. And if we can do these courses online, I don't even know why we have that anymore. If there's enough space that anyone can do that course, it's a crazy idea.
Surely it's something to work to, right? It's a carrot to dangle?
Sure. Yeah, it is. It is something to work to. But the reality is university isn't really based on that idea of how well you do in three-hour exams. So the thing that you get tested for actually isn't the skill that you need when you get to university, and it certainly isn't the skill you need when you get into the workforce. I mean, I can't think of many things that you do in life other than run a marathon where it needs to be done within a three-hour time frame to test how well you remember things. I mean, that idea is kind of crazy, because we don't live in an environment where it's about remembering things. We have all of the world's knowledge at our laptops and in our pockets with our technology, and yet we have this industrial idea of whoever has the best memory over a three-hour sprint is who deserves to get educational opportunities and a senior level. It seems as though it's a 100-year-old idea that somehow has is thwarting the potential for young kids to get into university places and further their education in the areas that they want to do.
Yeah, so what might it look like instead? Because I feel like there does still have to be some sort of system, right?
Yeah, there needs to be systems, but I think it should be, you know, pretty much in the same way that you would try and employ someone, right? When you go to employ someone, you look at their qualifications, you look at their skills, you look at their attitude, you interview them, you see what their experiences are outside of what they do at work. We have a broader view of considerations when we want to bring someone into our workplace. You know, when we become friends with someone, we look at the realm of all the things that they do, not just their intellectual capability on one little test. And so I think that what we do within the workplace is a far better example of how we bring people into to an organisation for learning. Mm. And in any case, if students were doing university courses online and they didn't pass the exam, surely they should be given the opportunity anyway. If they can do it online, if they can do all the courses that tutor the lectures online. Now, not with every university course, but many of them. I don't see why we're restricting people's opportunity to register themselves and go and do a course.
For schooling, do you think that homeschooling will become something that more people look at?
No, I don't think that homeschooling will be something that more parents look at. The first thing is so many parents are working these days, you know, having the traditional nuclear family with you know, a wife at home and a husband out working is pretty rare these days. And if you are working at home, then you've got things to do. I think we're going to realise that young kids need to be able to go somewhere. But there is a couple of things that I think will come out of it. The first one is there's quite a digital divide. And so it's easy to forget that many children don't have access to laptops or, you know, MacBooks or Chromebooks or iPads to do their work on. And the other thing we need to realise is that, you know, not every kid has access to the internet. You look at a country like Uruguay, as soon as you start school, you get a government laptop and every house is connected to Wi-Fi on their equivalent of the NBN. Now, that's the kind of thinking that we need. And the other one I think that we're going to realise after this crisis is that our primary school teachers are incredibly underpaid for how complex the work and how important the work that they do is. Mm. You know, during this COVID crisis, you know, the thing that I think about a lot is that the people that are paid the most in the society, I'm going to pick on investment bankers here and hedge fund managers, have the least important jobs. We've really realised who matters in this world.
It's been funny seeing some of the big CEOs be like, it's all right, I'll take a 50% pay cut. And it's like, how many millions are you still earning?
Yeah, how will you survive on 10 million? You poor thing. Look, you're going to forego your bonus? Thank you. Thank you. I'll sleep better at night now that you've done that.
How many staff have you just got rid of?
Yeah, look, I got rid of all these staff and I'm going to live on 2 million a year and, you know, I'll be sitting under a palm tree. It's fantastic. But, you know, here's who matters. The people, you know, cleaning, healthcare workers, people delivering food, people putting their lives at risk working in a supermarket each day. I mean, we realise that the nuts and bolts of our economy are often, you know, the people that really matter, when it comes down to it, are the least paid. Mm. And if there's anything we realise is that teachers at primary school, gee, they're underpaid for how hard their work is.
But what, like, especially as a futurist, someone who looks at the future, what actually drives that change? Because we do have short-term memories, right? As the human race, you know, this 24-hour news cycle, we do move on pretty quickly. Life will return to normal. Do you think we will still focus on some of these important parts or we'll all get caught up in what we're doing again?
Yeah, so here's what needs to happen. When we realise there's a schism in society and something is wrong, the only way that we can get to change things permanently, if we look through history into the future, the way to do that is you need to set down regulation. And the reason that regulation needs to be set is that people do have short-term memories. You know, it's the same with regulation on the roads. It's the same with regulation of health and safety in factories. And I think it should be, we need to regulate around wages. I think a future where you could have regulation so that there are limits on what people can earn based on what they do is actually really important. We've always had bottom end limits on wages, minimum wages. I actually think that this points out that we need to have a top end limit on wages, or that the top end wage can only be a certain percentage of people within who work within a company. So, for example, this is just an example. Imagine that a CEO can only earn 10 times what the bottom wage is in his company. If we had a law like that, all of a sudden you have an incentive aligned to a CEO, to the people at the bottom of the chain. And so everyone moves forward, the rising tide floats all boats. This is the type of thinking we need because what you say, humans are so seasonal and day-to-day, and the reason that we're so day-to-day and we forget things is our DNA is always like, I need to do what's going to feed me today. Mm. I'm going to do what's going to get me through the winter. That's, you know, that's 200,000 years of DNA. And so what we need to do is when a change happens is regulate around that so that we don't forget.
Steve, always interesting to chat with you. Thank you so much. We'll do it again in a fortnight.
Chat then. See ya.